If you give a homeless person a place to sleep, they'll be warm for the night. If you can help a homeless person learn marketable skills, he or she can truly regain independence. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Many homeless shelters work with their clients to help them find transitional housing and develop work skills. Shelter House in Iowa City gives clients an opportunity to work in a first-class commercial kitchen and learn how to cook from professional chefs. This hour, I'll talk with the executive director and executive chef at Shelter House and a client of the Culinary Starts program. We'll also talk about the job training program at Goodwill of the Heartland. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. For people who work with the homeless, providing short-term relief is relatively easy. Giving someone who is homeless the opportunity to truly get back on their feet is the real challenge. This hour, we'll talk about two innovative job training programs in Iowa. Later in the show, the work done by Goodwill of the Heartland. But first, Shelter House in Iowa City has been providing transitional shelter and support services to men, women, and children since 1983. The Culinary Starts program at Shelter House is a 12-week program that offers restaurant-level cooking, sanitation, and food production training to clients of Shelter House. And with me today is Chrissy Kanganelli, Executive Director of Shelter House. Hello, Chrissy.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And Kurt Fries, the new Executive Chef for Shelter House. Hello, Kurt.
Hi. Great to be back again, Charity. Thanks.
Chrissy, tell me, when did this Culinary Starts program get started?
Well, it got started in early 2011 after we moved into our new facility. So we were able to open our new facility in November of 2010. That was about a 7-year-long project. During those years, Kurt actually worked with a planning group to kind of develop the vision and the concept of what we wanted to do. It's just that for reasons that were beyond our control, the whole project took a long time. But we were actually able to get things launched in that first quarter of 2011.
And this is not just a training program. This is a business, right?
Exactly. It's really quite innovative, I believe, for nonprofits in our community and in our state. We've incorporated social enterprise within Shelter House that is mission-based, mission-driven, and intending to help with job training and placement for the folks that we're working with. So we're able to essentially have a micro-business within Shelter House that helps people be more employable and in some instances does employ individuals.
So it's a catering business.
Exactly.
Kurt, people who listen to Talk of Iowa a lot probably know a lot about you because you come on quite frequently for all of your many jobs as an author, the owner of Devotee Restaurant in Iowa City. Also, you're the publisher of Edible Iowa River Valley Magazine. Why did you want to do this, a new full-time job for you? What drew you to Shelter House and Culinary Starts?
Well, as I think you know, my restaurant has always been about being an important part of the community and trying to support the community that supports the restaurant, you know. And I've been working for many years on this concept that I refer to as the public hearth that is centered on the idea that we don't have a food problem in this country. We have a cooking problem in this country. Far too many people never learned how to cook or forgot how to cook, or they think it's too difficult, too time-consuming, or too expensive, and it's none of those things. This gave me the opportunity to help some people who really need it and to apply the old-fashioned teach a man to fish kind of concept.
You're not just teaching people how to cook, though. You're teaching people how to cook professionally.
That's true, and there is a big difference. I've often said that the folks who say that they're, I love to cook at home, so I should open a restaurant. That's a lot like saying I have a driver's license, so I should run Daytona. There is a big difference in how one cooks in a professional environment. A lot of rules and regulations that need to be adhered to. The clients in our program get certified through the National Restaurant Association in a program called ServSafe, certified in sanitation and those sorts of things. They learn about workplace safety. They learn various aspects of professionalism as well, how to write a resume and a cover letter, how to apply for a job, how to do an interview. those sorts of things that you really need, because if you don't present yourself as professional from the start, you're not going to get hired no matter what kind of skills you got.
Well, and we'll talk about some of the things that you're working on now as you take over this role. But Chrissy, can you give me an idea of the success of Culinary Starts over the last couple of years? I mean, how many people have you been able to train who have actually been able to get jobs in restaurants?
Well, we have it's a small program, and we've had interruptions with changes in staff. So we've had about, I think, 7 to 10 people who have actually gone through the program from start to finish. Later, you'll be talking with someone who is one of our graduates and a great success story. But we've had probably about 6 of those 10 that have graduated through and have been placed in the industry. So we're still working the kinks out and evolving, and with Kurt's leadership, really excited to see where this goes in the next phase.
What are some of the challenges to getting people through the program from start to finish? I mean, it's not a particularly long program, but I'm guessing that with the population you're working with, 12 weeks is a long-time commitment.
It is a long-time commitment. And for some of the issues early on, it was us trying to figure out what were the ways to incentivize participating, because individuals who are staying at the shelter, we have requirements as we're working with them. The case managers are working with them to actually find employment and save money so that they've got money to move into their own apartment. They've have, you know, things set aside. We needed to figure out and understand, have things in place so that they could not compromise that ability to have earnings while they were in the training program. So, you know, in the beginning, the concept was that these were not going to be paid placements. Well, that didn't work if you have a time limitation as to how much time you're able to stay at the shelter, work with a case manager, and plan to move forward. If you were spending 8 hours a day in the kitchen and therefore not able to actually earn, I don't know if that makes sense to the listeners, but, you know, it's a very time-sensitive equation that people are dealing with. So it took us a while to realize, well, we really do need to be able to pay people during this training period. So those kinds of barriers that are more so kind of the logistical kinds of things for us to figure out early on were one of them. Others are, as people are working with us, they're dealing with a whole host of other issues. As they're staying at the shelter, you know, there are issues that people have dealt with that brought them to our door that caused them to be homeless. Oftentimes, people are dealing with histories of substance abuse, chronic mental illness, other chronic health issues, issues in trying to stabilize their children, all these kinds of things. Those don't go away. And gladly, we have a professional team of case managers that are on site and working with folks. So the number of people that have gone through the culinary training program, while it's small, it's a new program for us. There's hundreds of people through Shelter House each year that we're working with on vocational training, employment placement, housing placement, all of these kinds of things. So this is, you know, one aspect and one opportunity that we have that's very focused in the culinary field. But the other work that we're doing with people is more expansive, I'd say.
Kurt, as you have taken over and you're getting settled, what are some of the main challenges for you right now?
Well, I'm sort of rebuilding an entire curriculum and putting systems in place so that it's so that what we've got going on is systems-based rather than personality-based. I often use the metaphor of a puppeteer and the marionette. And the problem with the hands-on management style is what happens when the hands come off. And that's what I was walking into when I came in, because the last chef departed rather suddenly. And Kim, who you'll be talking to later, did yeoman's work holding it together. But I think the greatest advantage I've got right now is a woman named Candace Clifton, who's the sous chef at the moment, and she runs the day-to-day production in the kitchen, so that I'm able to apply myself to the somewhat tedious but very important desk job work of putting together all these systems and writing work instructions and rebuilding the curriculum for the Culinary Starts program and all of that.
So in addition to the people who are taking advantage of this training opportunity, how many employees do you actually have with the Culinary Starts program? Because you have orders. You're fulfilling catering jobs, right?
Right, exactly so. And at the moment, it's the sous chef and myself and 8 others. We're still toying with that, whether it should be more or less. We know it will be more when it starts involving the students again, too, the beginning of the month.
And when people go through the training program, is there an opportunity for them to continue and stay with the Culinary Starts program and work for the Culinary Starts program?
Yes. In fact, that's when you start talking to Kim, that's exactly what she did.
So. All right. Well, that's a good cue to introduce Kim. with us also today is Kimberly Bloomer. She is a client of the Culinary Starts Program and employee of the Culinary Starts Program now. Kim, can you give us a little bit of an idea? We don't need to go into your personal life, but you were at a crisis point that brought you to Shelter House. When did you learn about the Culinary Starts Program?
About 2 weeks after entering the Shelter House for my 90-day stay.
What appealed to you about it?
Well, I'd been a hairdresser for 28 years, and so I like to be creative and artistic, and that was just another avenue to that. So it's pointing me in a different direction, creatively-wise. So I thought I'd give it a shot, and I liked it real well.
Did you bring any kind of cooking experience with you to the beginning of that program?
Like Kirk said, just at home. So it's a lot different than cooking in a kitchen.
What was your first impression once you got acquainted with the commercial kitchen?
I'm really enjoying it. I still have a lot more to learn.
Can you tell me something that you learned in the first days of your training that really surprised you?
Well, going back to being a cosmetologist, as Kurt said, with the sanitation and all that, I was very familiar with all those things. And it's a very important part of working in the kitchen because, you know, first you start with the dishwashing and then you proceed over to starting to prep and kind of back and forth getting familiarized with, you know, doing both parts and then going into the real part of the training.
Can you give me an idea? We haven't really talked about some of the catering jobs that you do with Culinary Starts. Can you tell me about, just pick out a job that you've worked on and how much food you've had to produce and what kinds of stuff you make?
We do various Iowa City locations for catering. We also cater to Mecca, the substance abuse program, Four Oaks, and then, of course, the Shelter House for the people staying there. So we're feeding approximately anywhere from 70 to 90 at the Shelter House, 40 at Mecca, and 31 between Four Oaks, and also the various Iowa City locations.
And that's every day?
Pretty much, yes.
Wow, you're busy.
Yes, very much so.
All right, we're going to take a short break here, and then we'll get back to our conversation in just a moment. Right now, we're talking about the Culinary Starts Program at Shelter House in Iowa City. It's a 12-week program that offers restaurant-level cooking, sanitation, and food production training to clients of Shelter House. It's also a business, as we've been learning. With me today, Kimberly Bloomer. She is a client of the Culinary Starts Program and now an employee of the Culinary Starts Program. Also with me is Kurt Fries. He's executive chef for Shelter House, and Chrissy Canganelli, Executive Director of Shelter House. A little later in the hour, we'll talk about Goodwill of the Heartland and their job training programs. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about some innovative job training programs for organizations that work with homeless populations. Right now, we're talking about Shelter House in Iowa City, which has been providing transitional shelter and support services to men, women, and children since 1983, and their really innovative Culinary Starts program, which started a couple of years ago. It's a 12-week program that offers restaurant-level cooking, sanitation, and food production training to clients of Shelter House. And with me today is Chrissy Canganelli. She is Executive Director of Shelter House, Kurt Fries, Executive Chef for Shelter House, and Kimberly Bloomer, who works at the Culinary Starts Program. And there, we've talked a lot about the kitchen at Shelter House, but that's not the entire operation, right, Kurt?
That's right. We also have a contract with the University of Iowa and run a small deli in their University Services Building, which is the one that houses the human resources and facilities management and things like that. Jackie works over there now. Kim is going to cross-train on it next week. Very, very simple food, you know, sandwiches, soup, that kind of thing, but another outlet for us to do some some professional training and still be able to help people learn as they go.
Kim was talking about all of the meals that you prepare on a daily basis. As you're training people and teaching them different skills, do the skills that you're trying to help people with influence the menu?
Oh, they have to. It's almost it is a requirement. The curriculum that I'm laying out, same time frame as they've had in the past, and I'm integrating it tightly with the menu that we serve, so that there'll be a lot more meat one particular week on the menu. But that's just to help people learn about the different kinds of meats and the different ways that they can be cooked. Really giving people the foundation stuff. Because once you have a foundation, once you know your basic knife skills, once you know the difference between roast and braise, once you know how to make a stock, it's like architecture, and you've got a good solid foundation. You can build whatever you want on top of it.
So the menu at Shelter House, does it repeat every 12 weeks? Is that how you envision things going?
No. there have been some cycles in the past, but we're trying to get away from that for the most part. The one small part that I think will probably keep a cycle in is that one of the small things that we do is snacks for the kids that are over at Four Oaks, and those things will go into a basic rotation across a month or so.
With the fact that you're preparing food on site for the people who are living at Shelter House, but you have to prepare food that can be transported off site in a catering business. Does that influence what you can make?
To some degree. And, you know, it sometimes provides us, the catering will sometimes provide us with a little bit of leftovers that we'll incorporate someplace else. But for the most part, the catering, for example, a lunch of lasagna and salad, garlic bread and fruit that we did yesterday for over at the USB, didn't have anything at all to do with what the rest of the stuff that we were doing.
Are there, since you're training people to go out and work in restaurants, are there some things that make it on the menu at Shelter House that would surprise us?
Oh, I don't think so. It's pretty straight ahead basic food. Menus can be planned out, and then suddenly we decide to change them because of some generous donation through Table to Table or one of the other supplying agencies, HACAP, for example. And that can alter things. But one of the things you've got to teach everybody is you've got to be ready to improvise, adapt, and overcome if you're going to be in the food service business.
Well, and Chrissy, of course, you're dealing with budgets at Shelter House. Is that sometimes a difficult balancing act between what Kurt will want to teach people to do in the kitchen and what you can actually afford to let him cook with?
No, he's familiar with the constraints and actually the ability to have this micro business and generate revenue through the contracts that we do have creates revenue that can be used to ensure that we have the equipment and supplies in place that the kitchen needs. You know, the real exceptional part of this, I think, is that we're able to go out to the community and say that there are several at-risk populations in Johnson County that are now being guaranteed nutritious, balanced meals that are made from scratch on a daily basis, that being the homeless folks that we're seeing coming through our shelter, folks in treatment over at Mecca, and at-risk youth over at youth homes. And I think that that's really exceptional. Different selections that may make it on the menu may not be surprising, but they're all made from scratch, really good quality food product. So
and that said, much as I might want to teach them how to make a Chateaubriand or lobster thermidor or something like that, that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, that is not in our budget.
Kim, since there's, of course, an ever-changing population at Shelter House, but there are people there that are there for a few months. And, of course, the people working in the kitchen often know the other people there pretty well. Do you get feedback after a meal?
Yes, I do.
What do people say?
Well, a lot of them like it. Kurt has come in and we have thrown a couple different things on the menu that they're not quite used to. You know, he's doing a little bit more incorporating restaurant style food, like I said, made from scratch. So some of the things that they're not used to or have never had before. So they're actually really trying some new and different things. Some like it, some don't. I mean, I think we're all kind of that way to some extent.
We get the things that are simply a matter of taste and purely subjective, too. Within the last 48 hours, I've had one person tell me that the bacon was cooked too much and another one tell me that it wasn't cooked enough. So,
You're bound to run into that anywhere. Exactly, yeah. How long have you been working at Culinary Starts, Kim?
I've been there since December 10th.
All right. So it's been a few months. Are you feeling like you've hit your stride? You've been through a lot of changes while you're doing this.
No, I've still myself have a lot to work, a lot of work to do yet. I said we had a very big transitional period with some leaving, some going, new ones coming in. And that was a very hard transition for me, as they all well know. But, I got accustomed to what we were doing. It was a big change. We weren't doing restaurant-style food. We were just kind of do basic things, something simple. It was more of an assembly line type. Everybody did their own little job and incorporated, put it together, and when we sent it out. We're learning a lot more. It's going to be a real nice training for everyone new coming in, and now I'll be able to get my hands in a little bit more. So I feel real good about that.
That's great. And what do you see as your future in this business?
I really hope to stay at Shelter House, hopefully be able to train some of the new employees at some point. You said, and now I'll be starting to go to the deli and cross train there.
And you enjoy the baking too, I remember.
Yes, I do, very much so.
You have daughters?
I have two.
What do they think of what you're doing?
Well, they're very artsy and creative too, so they're really glad I'm staying in that type of a field. They were up over the weekend, so I took them by the shelter, so they knew where I worked. They're very proud of me that I've taken a new direction in my life, and I'm just really lucky that the Shelter House is, putting me in a new direction and giving me more of a sense of being. I can't thank them enough. So thank you all.
Is there something that you've learned to make in this program and work that you've made for your girls?
I've not. This was the first time they've come up to Iowa City, so I've not been able to cook for them, nor when I'm at the shelter and cooking all day. I don't even go home and cook anymore. So there'll be that day, I'm sure, coming up. But as of right now, when you're in there all day, and I don't.
It's a busman's holiday kind of a situation.
Yeah,
sure. Is there something that you have learned to make that is a favorite for you?
There's lots of them, really.
I would guess it's the cookies.
The cookies, yeah.
They're awesome.
Muffins, banana bread, those sorts of things. Yeah, I do eat a lot of cookies, come to think of it. I'm glad you brought that up. I have to stop. But I do. When I make them, I make them from scratch, bake them off for all the different catering jobs that we have. And then I also always make up a tray for all the staff to try and give me their feedback on those types of things.
We're talking about the Culinary Starts program at Shelter House in Iowa City. It's a 12-week program that offers restaurant-level cooking, sanitation, and food production to clients of Shelter House in Iowa City. I'm talking with Kim Bloomer, who works at the Culinary Starts program. Also, Chrissy Canganelli, executive director of Shelter House, and Kurt Fries, the new executive chef for Shelter House. Kurt, with all of the food that you're producing every day and the changing population of the people who are training in the program, you have a fairly small, steady staff. Is it a real challenge to get this done every day?
It was the first couple of days. We were learning the systems that were in place, and at the same time, throwing new systems in. It was a lot like flying the plane while you're building it. But things are beginning to smooth out. I think Candace has the production system pretty well in hand. A lot of it still needs to be formalized with work instructions and recipes to abide by and so on. But we've brought some of the costs down and improved the quality of the food, even if some of it is a little strange for people every once in a while. But we're finding our way just like they are. So,
Chrissy, when You started this program. Was there another program like it that you patterned it off of?
We had gone out to visit folks from what's now called Catalyst Kitchens out in Seattle. They have culinary training program services. That's all that they do for folks who are experiencing homelessness in the Seattle area. And then they are available for consulting and kind of replicating that model across the country. We're different in so much as we have more of a vertical integration approach and have that within the shelter. So we're not going out to other organizations to bring people in. We're providing that within.
All right. And that seems like that would create its own level of challenge. Do you have other shelters who are coming to you and saying, show us how you can do this?
Yes, there is interest in the state. And there'll be a statewide conference for housing providers and homeless providers in September that are interested in learning more, especially about the opportunity to have social enterprise within your nonprofit organization. They're also interested in the other work that we're doing. In particular, we have a janitorial business that we started called Fresh Starts. Through that, we employ people who are living in our permanent supportive housing program, our lodge. These individuals have all histories of chronic, serious, persistent mental illness. They've been told for many years that they can't work, and in fact, they can, and they want to work very much. So through the janitorial business, it's work that they're able to do and do well. Feel part of a community, contribute. So we've seen a great success in that and always looking for more contracts, more opportunities to provide janitorial services for other businesses in the community. On top of those two activities, there's the general vocational training and employment placement services that we have within Shelter House. We have two vocational coordinators at Shelter House that work with one with our veterans and another with just the general population, because remember, we have over 600 people that stay at Shelter House in a year. So we're providing vocational coordination training, placement, partnering with local community businesses for placement sites such as New Pioneer Food Co-op, Crowded Closet. I'm going to blank out and not be able to think of the list of others, but many local businesses that will work with us to find placements for people to build job skills, their paid internship opportunities, and then in so doing, building a resume for someone so they are more employable.
I think when a lot of people think about a homeless shelter, they really don't think much beyond a place for people to sleep and a place for people to get food when they need it. It sounds to me like your organization is incredibly complex and large. How many people do you employ?
We have about 30 employees at Shelter House. And it has gotten more complex as we've gotten larger. But we challenged ourselves many years ago to be more than just that bed and place for people to get out of the cold, and wanted to do so much more than providing the essential services. Of course, you can't begin to think of the other things until you know that you can guarantee those essential services. But a long time ago, we challenged ourselves to be more than that and to really look at how we can help people move beyond homelessness. And in so doing, I think we've challenged our community, and they've really stepped up just wonderfully.
With so much innovative vocational training at Shelter House, do you find that you're attracting people from outside of Johnson County, outside of the immediate area, who think, wait, this is the opportunity that I need to get back on my feet?
Not so much. When we hear people's stories as to why they're coming, the veterans that we're working with, of course, are coming through our VA. I mean, we're one of the few communities in the state that has a VA medical center, and that really does draw people here. We're able to offer the services as they are here to help them get back on their feet. University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, another real significant pull factor for people. Our school system, another pull factor for families. People want their kids to have good educations. It's just as they come to us, we're able to say, welcome. You're here now. Let us help you move beyond the situation that you find yourselves in and do so efficiently. So it's, I think, a different understanding that people have. Oftentimes it is just kind of what you described, that people think that people are coming because we have the services. And indeed, that's not the case. It's these other pull factors that I see.
Now, of course, recently our entire nation has gone through a difficult recession. A lot of people were out of work, and although the unemployment numbers in Iowa never got as high as they did in many, many other places, there were still a lot of people out of work in Iowa. Did that make it harder for you to place people who were working with you through your vocational training?
Sure it did, because we're working with people who oftentimes do need additional supports to be successful in the workforce. But our numbers were still very strong, and our employment overall for our economy, our economy remains strong in Johnson County in comparison to the rest of the state. So, again, I'll take that back to kind of what does draw people here is that they know that even when the economy's tight, there are still better opportunities here for employment than other areas. But, yeah, we did see a dip and a strain in the last 18 months, but are really glad to see those things turn around now.
Do you have employers who come to you again and again looking for people who've been through your training?
We're trying to build those relationships and educate the community still. I think we're in that early phase. And in having two folks on our staff that are specifically vocational coordinators and not having that as a shared responsibility of all the staff has made a difference. So I'd say that we hope to see that in the next few months, but not yet. We're new in this. So
Before we run out of time, Kurt, since you've just taken on this role of executive chef at Shelter House, if you come back 2 years down the road, what do you hope you'll be able to say that you've accomplished in the couple of years at Shelter House?
I'd like to see mostly what you were just discussing. I'd like to see employers coming to us looking for people instead of us going out to find employers. I think that would be an excellent benchmark, a milepost that says that we must be doing something right.
All right. Kurt Fries, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Kurt Fries is the new executive chef at Shelter House in Iowa City. Chrissy Kanganelli is executive director of Shelter House, and Kim Bloomer works at the Culinary Starts program. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. We're going to turn our attention to the vocational training done by Goodwill of the Heartland. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're focusing on vocational training for homeless populations. We were talking about an innovative program at Shelter House in Iowa City a few minutes ago. Now we're going to turn our attention to the work done by Goodwill of the Heartland. Goodwill serves Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, Muscatine, and the Quad Cities. And with me now is Sandy Anderson. She is Assistant Program Director for Goodwill of the Heartland. Hello, Sandy.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today. And a lot of different people get vocational training through Goodwill. Can you tell me how clients come to you? Where do they come from?
Clients usually come from a referral source. A lot of times Iowa Vocational Rehab, or they'll self-refer, or through the Mental Health and Disability Services through Johnson County.
And when someone gets referred to Goodwill, what can you do for them? How do you start?
A lot of it depends upon where they're at and what their goals are. So there's assessment and evaluation services, trying to kind of determine what their individual goals for employment are and what some of the barriers are that we need to assist them with.
I think a lot of us who have shopped at Goodwill stores know that a lot of people get vocational training through working at Goodwill stores. Can you give us an idea of some of the other opportunities that you can help people with?
We do a lot of vocational services out in the community. So identifying what a client's interests are and then looking for an employer that offers employment that matches those interests. So it can vary quite a bit. Retail, receptionist, medical transcriptionist, it pretty much just depends upon the skill levels and the interests. And then we'll assist them with carving out an opportunity.
And do you find placements for people in different training programs? How does that work? Like if somebody wants to become a medical transcriptionist, how do you help them gain those skills?
They may take some classes. They may do some job shadowing or internships where they're being paid to learn the skills, with the hope being it'll be a competitive job placement where they're paid by the employer.
All right. Well, I want to turn to one of the success stories of Goodwill of the Heartland. Stephen Roskopf is here with me today. He is a Vietnam vet. He's formerly homeless, got job training through Goodwill of the Heartland. Stephen, What brought you to Goodwill? Can you tell me what your life was like before you got the vocational training through Goodwill?
Before I ended up at or was introduced to Goodwill, I was living under a bridge down in Davenport, and my sister got me to transfer up here to Iowa City and get some help from the VA medical center they have here. And through the VA medical center over there, at the time I met the right people, which was the key, because I've been all my life, I've lived in probably 13 different states and I don't know how many cities. And I'd always hit the VA first to find out what's going on there. But Iowa City's VA was the first time that the right people took the time to listen to me. And they eventually got me in contact with Sandy, which was my savior, you know. I mean, because practically going through Goodwill, it was, you know, my life was totally backwards. I couldn't operate any machinery. I couldn't be around people, you know, and I had a zillion job skills. I've sold everything from real estate, life insurance, cars, shoes, men's clothing, whatever. I've worked in every aspect of the construction industry, but I just couldn't, you know, mentally I just couldn't be around people and do anything. And when I went to Goodwill, I met the right people, Sandy and some of the other people there, and they just basically took the time to work with me, you know, and guide me towards the, you know, what it's like to live in society after, you know, losing it, you know. So
what kind of training, job training, did you get through Goodwill?
Well, I wasn't so much job training through them because I've done so many jobs through my life.
You have a lot of skills that you can bring to this.
Yeah,
right?
And so, but I wasn't capable of working around other people. So what they did was they used the knowledge that I had and put me in the right positions of the jobs in order to, you know, bring me back into civilian life, you know, because I basically lived my whole life according to the way I lived a year and a half in Vietnam. You know, you only got this guy here on your left and this guy here on your right to, you know, to protect you and protect your area. And that was your job on down the line, you know. And so I adapted that style of living for 40 years, you know, until I got in connection with these people. And it worked for me, you know.
What are you doing now?
I work out at the Herbert Hoover Museum doing janitorial. You know,
in West Branch. How long have you been there?
9 years.
9 years.
9 years.
Yeah. You know, and before that, I worked at the Corville Reservoir at the Rangers Shacks, you know, doing the same thing. But back then, I had to have a job coach because they weren't sure if I was, you know, stable yet. So.
Well, but 9 years at the Herbert Hoover Museum, that says stability to me.
Exactly.
That's certainly been.
That's what Goodwill brought to me, you know, as a veteran suffering severe PTSD and whatnot and anxiety and depression, the whole works. So
Stephen's pretty much a leader on the crew now when we bring in new individuals because it is a set-aside for people with disabilities. So with new staff and employees that come on, he's been a great mentor and has assisted with training them in order to do the job. So very much a leadership role there.
Now, when you think about your life before connecting with Goodwill and you think about your life now, did you ever think that you could live this life?
No, you know, I mean, like I said, before I came to Iowa City, I was living underneath a bridge. You know, I went from, I was actually a games dealer on the riverboat down there for 2.5 years, and I was making more money than I knew what to do with, you know. And then all of a sudden, all the war started coming to my head, you know, pictures that I couldn't get rid of, and it started driving me crazy, and I ended up living under a bridge for 3 months, you know. And then I ended up in Iowa City, and I met the, like I said, I met the right people at the finally, you know. And it just, you know, it just guided me right through, you know, to learn how to live in society, which is a problem with returning veterans, I think. There's no one to tell, you know, you go over to a war as an 18, 19-year-old kid, and, you know, like me, never been out of the state of Iowa, you know, until then. And then you're thrown into some zone, handed a rifle and said, here, take care of that guy over there, you know. He's a bad guy. And then you come back and they dump you off and they tell you, well, here's what benefits you're allowed as a veteran. But they don't tell you how to live your life, how to, you know, have a relationship with someone, how to work a job and be satisfied at it, how to go to school and you know, they don't tell you anything about the reality of life once you come home. And Goodwill, you know, after 40 years, I finally found someone who took the time to listen, you know.
There are so many veterans coming home now from Afghanistan and Iraq, and a lot of people are struggling with the same things now that you struggled with when you came home. Do you ever get a chance to talk to some of those younger vets?
Traveling around, I do talk to, you know, they find out I'm a veteran or something, and then they... You know, in fact, I just became good friends with a young guy who was in the reserve for 4 years, and he just got out a couple weeks ago. And him and I talk all the time now. You know, he's just thrilled to know somebody that had, you know, he never ended up going to war, but you know, being in the military is an entirely different way of life. You know. Everything is structured and rules and regulations, and you know, and then when you're thrown into a war zone, it becomes an entirely different game, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so you know, yeah, in 2010, I was actually they have in Coralville Dam, they have a what they call a Veterans Trailway Walk, and I was actually inducted into that in 2010, and every Memorial Day, it's coming up. In fact, they have a bunch of gentlemen veterans that are going to be inducted in it, and so every year I try and go to that and talk to the whole crowd is nothing but
right.
Veterans, you know.
Right.
So
when Sandy, when we talk about vocational training, I mean, clearly Stephen has pointed out that it's not just about learning skills.
Right.
So when someone like Stephen comes to you and they clearly need help to be able to be employable, how do you assess what they need?
I think when it's not about work skills, when it's some of the other issues like Stephen's talking about, it really, really first starts with just listening and understanding what their barriers are and what's keeping them from succeeding, and then addressing those individually.
I can imagine that in many situations you need a lot of support from therapists and other people. Do you run into barriers when you're trying to get the people who come to you the help that they really need?
I think that is always can be somewhat difficult because there's probably not enough medical professionals to go around. Now, Stephen, being part of the VA system, has access to good support and providers. I think for Stephen, probably it's just assisting him with remembering to go to the appointments, and because sometimes that becomes a problem. The services are there, but because you have to get up and go somewhere for them, if you're really dealing with a lot of issues, that becomes very difficult. And that's one of the things that, because we're going into people's homes and into their environments, that we can help make sure that they link up with providers and professionals that are available in the community.
And Stephen, you mentioned your work at the Herbert Hoover Museum, and Sandy, you described that as a permanent program with Goodwill where you provide the employees for that crew, or how does that work?
The contract at Herbert Hoover is actually a JWAT contract.
What does that mean?
Well, that's probably a whole program. It's where the government looks for opportunities to set aside work for individuals with disabilities. So it's a federal contract with the federal wages, but it requires us to employ people with disabilities. Basically, as long as they're happy with this, it's permanent. And Stephen, you know, has just been a huge part of the satisfaction.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
For that contract.
Do you have a lot of relationships like that in this part of Iowa?
Not as many as we'd like, but we're always looking for opportunities. JWAD program is a really, really good opportunity for people with disabilities. Just not as many opportunities in Iowa as some places where you'd have a military base or more opportunities. But I think that they provide a really, really nice employment for individuals we work with.
Looking at your website, I can see that you are trying to attract other employers who may look to Goodwill for employees. What is your pitch? How do you attract businesses that don't have government contracts or anything like that, but what can you offer them that they may not be able to find looking for employees on their own?
I would probably say the biggest thing that the way that we can benefit people is that the individuals we work with are going to be there. They want to work. They're going to show up and they're going to give it their best. And they're also going to be able to tell the employers that we're not going to put them in a position and leave. We're there if an issue comes up, if they need support in order for it to be successful.
Stephen, with as much as you went through, in some ways you're really one of the lucky ones because you did find the people who could help you.
That's it. The people at the VA, they set me up with Goodwill. And they used to have a program that I started with here. It was called STAR. And I think it's now with MECA or something.
There's still a STAR program through Shelter House.
But and then through them, they went through my skills, abilities, and enlisted and started me at in the government contracts, almost right away, but yeah, it's just a matter of the people, like I said, as many places I've lived in my life, it's funny, I had to come home to find out the best place to get the best proper care, and
right.
guidance.
Well, I hope there are a lot of other people who also find that care and guidance that they need. Stephen, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
No problem.
Stephen Roskopf is a veteran of the Vietnam War. He's formerly homeless, and he got job training through Goodwill and has been living independently and successfully for many years now. Also with us today, Sandy Anderson, Assistant Program Director for Goodwill of the Heartland that serves Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, Muscatine, and the Quad Cities. Talk of Iowa is produced by Emily Woodbury, Dennis Reese, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can send us email anytime. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, performance poet Sarah Kay. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.